All right, great to be back now with Salem. I almost said Salem Evening News, but I'm going to amend that. Salem News reporter Dustin Luca. You know, that's how far back I go, Dustin. I don't even know if you have heard of the Salem Evening News.
Oh, of course I've heard of the Salem. No, and it's actually interesting. If you drive around in downtown Salem and you pass the building that the Salem News actually used to be in, there's still a historical sign on the roof that says the Salem Evening News, even so much that they actually, I think a couple of years ago, they did historic preservation on it. So.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So that, well, I need some historic preservation myself.
I think we all do.
Yeah, and I'm able to get that with an occasional Guinness. But a lot going on, Dustin. It's been a while since we talked, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. So much to cover, so little time. But let's take it right from the top. You've been covering, again, many things in the area. But housing in the area is moving up to the top of the list. And I've talked with the Salem mayor. I've talked with, in fact, all of the mayors around the North Shore, and it's a very, very critical issue today. And what's your take on this? What have you been discovering?
So what I'm seeing, at least in Salem, is that there's a lot of different opinions on where the housing crisis is coming from, and then everybody with those different opinions also has differing opinions on how to resolve the issue, and that creates a bottleneck where, like, the mayor can present a couple of different things, and then they don't actually go forward. And this has been kind of a recurring thing that's been happening in Salem, where they need a supermajority to get some of these things to pass, which is two-thirds. 8 of the 11 councilors, but 4 of them are opposed, so that minority of 4 is able to actually stop the policies from going forward. That's something that has gotten attention from Governor Charlie Baker in the past year. He's actually attacked the city council twice and has used this to basically say, we need to make sure that these changes only require a simple majority, which in this case would be 6 of the councilors. The latest development with all this is last week, 2 of the councilors who were in that kind of dissenting body of 4 filed an order to actually bring Baker's housing secretary, Mike Keneally, to Salem to basically show city officials, the city council boards and things like that how to do their jobs, kind of. And then there was also 2 other orders that Steve Dibble, a ward counselor there, tried bringing in that accused the mayor of bullying in association with a couple of these votes that took place back in June and July and just all this other stuff. And I know one of those 2 bullying related orders passed last week. The other one did not, but it's expected to go forward next week. And right now I'm still just trying to kind of sift through all of that, because it's the city itself is actually very divided in this. The people that vote for those 4, you know, are backing them doing what they're doing. The people who vote for the other 7 are backing what they're doing. And it just seems like nobody's able to really step down. So bringing the housing secretary to Salem at some point in the near future might actually be a way to solve the issue, because you'll actually have everybody sitting at the table talking the same language.
What is the issue in general, Dustin? Because I know that, for example, in Gloucester, affordable housing, in quotes, is always a topic, but there's a formula that's kind of messed up with respect to property values and so on. So some of the, quote, affordable housing is not affordable at all for low-income people. But those in favor of the mayor's proposal or against, what's the major issue, if you could?
So what it boils down to is, I think, kind of a difference of opinion on what the housing that is being built needs to look like. One of the things we keep hearing from a couple of the councilors, particularly Dibble, is this idea of luxury housing, as he calls it, where it's basically looking at what the area median rate is and how most people who are trying to live in the area can't actually afford that. So, you know, it's kind of perceived as being luxury. And the big issue, so the latest thing that sank with the city council was this thing known as inclusionary zoning, which actually would have required every project with 6 or more units to include affordable housing. But what ultimately sank the proposal was this thing called the density bonus, where if you use this permit process to go forward and you actually provided the affordable units, you could also provide more units overall and kind of increase the density. And that was kind of seen as a way to make it so the project is balanced. And that was particularly something that the opponents of the plan didn't like, because then what you're basically doing is you're, like, let's say it's a 300 unit project, all of a sudden then it becomes maybe 375 or something like that because of the density bonus. So there was a lot of, okay, this is way too big, and it seems Dibble was trying to have the density bonus removed, and when he couldn't do that, that's what triggered the 4 councilors to go against it.
This is way over my head. You know, I taught math for a long time, and just this whole thing baffles me with the rules and regulations. And what's next, Dustin? What will be happening? I mean, you mentioned getting the Secretary of Housing to Salem. Are there other things on the agenda?
The third of Dibble's filings is going to be going back to the city council next week, and I feel like that's probably going to go forward, because this is simply calling for one of the city council's committees to have a meeting. So I think that that's probably going to find some way of going forward somehow, just so they can have a conversation. And then whatever happens after that, I've got no idea, because they've got to hold meetings and have conversations and things like that. And even if the part that has not passed yet doesn't go forward, there are still two other issues related to the housing crisis that have gone to this committee that they're going to be scheduling a meeting for.
A curiosity for me, being in the media, how do you cover this? How do you take care of that stuff? Is it done? Obviously, I don't think you can go to their meetings. So what is this done by, Zoom or some kind of platform?
Yeah, it's all remote. And actually, one of the things I've been doing lately is I've been on Twitter live tweeting these things. So basically, as people are commenting, I'm tweeting out the comments. And then easily enough for me, once the meeting's over, I actually just use those tweets to write the story. But it also allows people who aren't able to tune in for some reason to just go back to my Twitter feed and see the things that are said. So that's something that's kind of been helpful in the age of COVID, the fact that nobody's actually sitting in these rooms. You can't actually go to anywhere. And not everybody has a computer to be able to tune in.
Right. Well, I don't mean this to be disrespectful at all, quite the opposite, but your tweets are very entertaining, and they could be fodder for Saturday Night Live material. And you're not disrespectful in them, but, God, they're funny. They're really great to read, and I do laugh. So keep those going. And I also can understand the value of going back to those when you write your story. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I mean, and I don't mind throwing jokes into the things. I mean, I think it's the only way to actually keep an audience engaged in a zoning meeting that runs for an hour, because otherwise you can't get people to pay attention.
Some of those descriptions, man, I'm just laughing and say, yeah, that's it. I can visualize it, so I do appreciate that. Before we move on to another topic, is there anything else you want to mention about this housing situation?
No, that's it. I mean, it's an active situation. We've been covering it in Salem for a couple of years now, and it seems to continue to somehow find a way to move forward somehow.
It's sort of like this COVID thing. There's no solution. There's no one size fits all solution in community to community. So we'll keep our eye on that. And I do appreciate that. And I want to ask you about the other major topic that I'm of interest in, and that is the schools being reopened. You've covered schools, school committee, and all that kind of stuff for so long, and this is the first week for most communities to get back into action, however that is. So how do you see it from your vantage point?
Well, everybody seems to be doing something different, kind of back to the housing situation. Everybody has a different approach. I know today PBD's going back, I believe. Beverly's in the process of going back. Salem, most of Salem went back on Monday. Their pre-K and kindergarten students went back today. I don't have updated numbers right now, but I know as of last week, they had about 3,700 students throughout the district, and about 450, I think, were actually attending in-person classes. So, and that's created a couple of other issues with a couple buildings that didn't have ventilation, you know, stuff taken care of. So there's some students in some of the schools that are actually starting their years in other schools. But it's the schools were able to fire off this past week. I haven't heard any complaints yet, but I haven't had much of a chance to also check in either. I know a lot of school administrators and even teachers have been, you know, burning midnight oil to basically get classrooms ready to make sure all the core stuff that needs to be online is online. And then that creates all the other issues of making sure that every student in your class has a Chromebook or some way of actually getting into the class. I know that's something that the district and actually all districts have been grappling with as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it sounds the same wherever we go. It's sort of a day by day and sometimes even hour by hour situation. And that's subject to change. I got to ask you now, Dustin, as we get to my final questions here. I talked with the mayor about the tourist season. I talked actually with Kim Fox more than with Mayor Driscoll, Kate Fox,
yeah.
Over at Destination Salem. And I know that in Gloucester, in Salem, it's been such a spectacular summer weather-wise. We did see an influx of tourists, and I just wonder what the impact might have been in your area.
So a lot of people were fearing the impact, and I feel like it ultimately didn't come to pass. Like, there was a lot of thinking that with people coming from outside of the area to Salem, to Massachusetts in general. You know, they might be coming from a state that's at risk or something like that. And I know just from my walking around downtown, as the tourists actually did start showing up anyway, I did see a lot of people that weren't wearing masks, or maybe they were wearing them halfway, leaving their nose exposed for some reason. Salem, for the last couple months, has actually had a mandatory mask order for all of downtown, and I know that they've been sending people out to try to enforce that and hand out masks and things like that. So I think a lot of people were worried that the more that tourists are coming from, like, places down south and things like that, that the COVID exposure would increase in the city. But the numbers have kind of actually stayed level, and in a lot of cases have actually dropped. I've been watching. In fact, today the dashboard from the state's going to be putting out new numbers. And for the last several weeks, Salem has been kind of in what the state sees as the yellow rating, where it's kind of, it's a moderate risk but not a high risk, and they've kind of been floating around in the middle of that, despite the fact that the tourists are coming out more and more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what the city's doing in terms of the mask requirements and things like that, it's obviously working because the people are coming to Salem, but the COVID itself is not increasing.
You know, I know restaurants are not back, you know, at full strength, but have they gotten a boost from the tourists this summer?
From what I've seen, but Salem's also, and this is something that every community has been doing, you know, they've been setting up, you know, outside dining and things like that, where they set up jersey barriers, and then there's other efforts to try to paint those barriers to make them a little more visually pleasing, and it kind of has that kind of outside dining Newburyport kind of feel now popping up in downtown Salem. The thing that I think everybody needs to watch, however, is as we're going through September into October, it starts getting colder, everybody's appetite for doing that outside dining is going to change a little bit, and then people are going to start wanting to go indoors where you don't actually have the fresh air and the ability to keep people safe.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of watching to see how things change basically with the restaurants and with the tourism industry, you know, as we go through October into November. And obviously with Salem, once you hit November 1st, the tourism drops off sharply, but I still feel like people are still going to be trying to go out to, you know, grab a bite to eat at Rockefeller's or something like that.
Well, I'm one of them, and that's one thing I'm curious about, is to see what's going to happen, you know, when we have to move indoors and see how that's going to play out. You know, Dustin, ordinarily this would be, and this is my final question, ordinarily this would be pre-haunted happenings happening right now in September. It really starts to gear up. So what's going to happen?
So the city itself actually curtailed all of the events that they tend to run every single year, and that includes the Haunted Happenings Parade on the first Thursday of the month, and that includes the food truck festivals that come in. I know usually I think that's the last weekend of September usually. All that stuff was canceled, but there's still hundreds of events that are being run by the businesses privately. I know if you go to Destination Salem's website, salem.org, it's got a link to a guide. There's a mobile app that's now launched that tells people, okay, if you're coming to Salem for some reason, here are some of the things that you can do. That way people are kind of being guided to kind of the safest options and things like that, which I think is probably a great way of handling it, because you know the tourists are going to come no matter what, so you might as well still try to actually guide what direction they head in.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just from there, we just have to basically see what happens.
And it's 1 month of the year when it's people are used to wearing masks, I guess. So, you know.
Exactly. And then one of the things that we have staff meetings every morning at the Salem News. One of the things that I've been talking about lately is how does trick-or-treating, you know, get affected by
right.
this? I was driving down Highland Avenue a couple of days ago, and I noticed that there were two Spirit Halloween places, or, you know, something like that, that popped up saying, hey, come get your costumes. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, are people actually going to be going door-to-door to get candy this year?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of unfortunate because Halloween this year was supposed to be for the record books. You know, you're going to have 5 weekends in October. You're going to have a full moon
yep.
on Halloween, which falls on a Saturday. And I mean, so that setup itself was supposed to set records this year. And, you know, just how kind of magical is it that a global pandemic came along at the same time?
Yeah, yeah. There's a little. Well, okay, that's Dustin Luker of the Salem News. And I suggest you go to salemnews.com for more on that. But you can also Google. There's a really cool app on Google. And if you Google Salem News Dustin Luker articles, his articles will pop up for you, and I suggest that people go do that. Dustin, anything else you want to mention?
Nope, just have a great day and stay healthy.
I appreciate it. You too. And I'm going to check in not so long a time period this time.
Alright, take it easy.
Thanks, Dustin. Stay safe.
You too.
That is Dustin Luker, who is the reporter for pretty much the Salem reporter for the Salem News, although everybody covers everything, of course. This is MSONewsSports.com.